Welcome to More Than Medicine, where Jesus is more than enough for the ills that plague our culture and our country. Hosted by author and physician Dr. Robert Jackson, with his wife Carlotta and daughter Hannah Miller. So listen up, because the doctor is in.
Welcome into More Than Medicine. My name is Hannah Miller. I'm the host of The Hannah Miller Show, and I'm here with my dad, Dr. Robert Jackson, who's your normal host for More Than Medicine. And we're going to have a little discussion today that's a little bit different. You've been in the middle of a three-part series on pornography. We're putting a pause on the third segment of that to jump in and do a radio broadcast on the COVID vaccines and COVID treatment. And that's just because you've been inundated in the last couple of weeks, primarily with phone calls, text messages, and people asking you what your opinions are, what your thoughts are regarding the vaccines and treatments and what's going on. And so you just decided, you know what, I need to take a moment and just respond to all of this. And of course, it's, in my opinion, quite wise for people to be reaching out to you. You are knowledgeable. You're a medical doctor. You've been in the business for almost 40 years. And so you've been around the block a few times, and you kind of know how a lot of these medications work and what happens. And so we're going to address that today. You'll pick up the last segment for our portion of your pornography series next week. So y'all hold on for that. Y'all stick around. That's going to be a really good podcast and radio show. But this week, we're going to dive into talking about the COVID vaccines and some treatments. So I've heard you say a couple of times, just, you know, off air in conversations, you've used the word so-called vaccine. Can you just tell me, why do you call it a so-called vaccine?
Well, the so-called COVID vaccine is not really a vaccine. It's an EWGA, which stands for an experimental unapproved genetic agent. Let me say that again, an experimental unapproved genetic agent. The so-called COVID vaccine never completed the stage 3 trials. And in fact, everyone who is now receiving the so-called vaccine is an unnamed volunteer in a stage 4 trial. And that's why it's a so-called vaccine. It's actually an experimental, unapproved genetic agent. It was rushed through the trial because of the expediency, because of the perceived danger of the COVID pandemic.
Well, and I know that one of the things I've seen is, you know, how long it takes for these. I mean, how many decades did they research for the polio vaccine? How many decades were they doing research and trials for so many of these other vaccines that we have now? And then, you know, we cranked out the COVID vaccine in a matter of months. So what's actually in the injection?
Well, if you look at the manufacturer's literature, their statement is a nucleoside modified messenger RNA encoding the viral spike protein S of SARS-CoV-2. Should I say that again?
It's a little bit.
Let me just put it in other words. It's a lipid-coated messenger RNA that causes your DNA to produce the COVID virus's spike protein. And then your body will recognize the spike protein as foreign material and produce antibodies to it. That's the theory. And I think pretty much that's what happens.
So back up a little bit. When did vaccines begin to appear on the medical scene?
In the early 1900s, smallpox was the very first vaccine, and it was a huge medical breakthrough. The polio virus was discovered in 1909, and a vaccine for humans appeared in 1954, 45 years later. Now pay attention to these time scales. The measles vaccine was discovered in 1911, and then in 1957, 46 years later, a vaccine for humans was on the market. influenza virus was discovered in 1933. And then 12 years later, in 1945, a vaccine was available for humans. Hepatitis B virus was discovered in 1967. And then in 1984, 25 years later, a vaccine was available. The COVID vaccine, by comparison, was discovered in 2019. And 6 months later, in 2020, before the viral trials were, the vaccine trials were completed, that vaccine was released on humans. And that should cause a great deal of pause for those of us in the medical community. Now, I want people to understand that I'm not an anti-vaxxer. Mm-hmm. Now, except when I was 5 years old. And I recall very clearly that I was anti-vax when I was 5 years old, and I created quite a stir in my pediatrician's office down in Charleston, South Carolina. I administer vaccines routinely in my medical practice. Mm-hmm. I actually receive vaccines personally, but not the COVID vaccine.
So what is happening nationally right now, nationwide, regarding COVID?
Well, my listeners need to understand that 99.5% of healthy people under 65 who contract COVID will survive the virus. And in fact, most people under 65 who contract COVID will have minor symptoms. And a lot of my patients who come to me who have antibodies to COVID will say to me, I didn't even realize that I had the illness. Mm-hmm. Statistically, 90%+ of those who die from COVID are over 65 with significant comorbidities, and most of those are the extremely elderly and are very infirm. And what I'm saying is that most of the folks in the United States who have died from COVID have been very old, over 75, very infirm, and have had multiple comorbidities like COPD, diabetes, coronary artery disease, dementia, those sorts of illnesses.
And I know one of the things you just kind of started to mention, you have patients who come in and they test positive for the antibodies without even knowing that they had COVID-19, which is one of the reasons that one thing that I say over and over and over again to people is, before you even consider taking a vaccine that has inherent risks with it, make sure that you don't have natural immunity already. Go get tested for antibodies. Where can people do that?
Most doctor's offices can test you for the antibodies. People can donate blood, and they can find out via that method whether or not they have antibodies.
Okay.
Listen, 1/3 of those over 80 who receive the vaccine develop no immune response at all to the COVID genetic agent. In March of this year, a group of German scientists published an article comparing how folks over 80 respond to the vaccine compared to those 60 years old and under. In their study, 17 days after the second vaccine, when you would anticipate that the immune response would be the greatest, 1/3 of patients over 80 had no antibodies to COVID at all. Now, that's not surprising, because doctors have known for a long time that folks over 80 often do not produce an antibody response to the flu vaccine. So it's not surprising to physicians that a significant percentage of people over 80 whose immune systems are diminished because of age do not develop an immune response to the COVID vaccine.
So I thought when they did the trials for Pfizer and Moderna, the vaccine trials, that they proved that they were 94% or more effective at preventing COVID. Is that accurate?
Well, first of all, neither of these so-called vaccines prevents COVID. People need to understand that. Both manufacturers, Pfizer and Moderna admit to that fact. They merely reduce symptoms. In fact, just 2 days ago, four of the leading virologists in the United Kingdom stood before the British Parliament and made a strong statement to the British Parliament that these vaccines do not prevent COVID, that they merely reduce symptoms.
And I think that's what our CDC director finally kind of admitted here in the United States, is that it doesn't, you know, it doesn't prevent you from getting COVID. It just reduces your symptoms, which is great, especially if you're elderly. That could be something that's really good for you if you're in the high risk category. But the second thing was that it doesn't prevent transmission. And of course, that's the thing that I think everybody expected this to be able to do, is not only, you know, it prevented you from getting COVID and thereby prevented you from being able to spread COVID. But now here they're saying, well, wait a minute, you can still get COVID even after having the vaccine,
and you can still transmit the virus. Exactly right. Well, here's the deal. The COVID trials by Moderna and Pfizer included 70,000 patients collectively. Their test subjects were all under 65, and they were all healthy, except for 1,700 patients who were 75 and older, and 5 patients who were over 80. There were only 9 hospitalizations out of the 70,000, and there was only 1 death in both of the trials. Now, pay attention. If COVID has killed 500,000 people in the United States, which averages 1 in 600, why were their stats so different? It's because they only tested very healthy people under age 65, which, to be fair, is typical of all drug trials. Drug trials usually only incorporate healthy people between ages 18 and 65. Unfortunately, that does not include the people who most need the vaccine, the very elderly and the very infirm.
So why are you reluctant to recommend the COVID vaccines? Or I'm sorry, the genetic agents?
Well, let me just share a little bit of information. In 2016, there was a paper that was co-authored by the Moderna founder explaining the polyethylene glycol element of the lipid nanoparticles, and saying that it might prove especially dangerous. Repeated intravenous injections with such molecules had been shown to cause acute hypersensitivity, or so warned the authors of the article. Both Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are given as shots in the muscle rather than injected directly into the blood, and that minimizes the risk. But nevertheless, those lipid-coated messenger RNA injections involve the high risk of acute hypersensitivity. Now, here's a quote from the article. Currently, no messenger RNA therapeutic is approved for use in humans, and a beneficial safety profile in patients still has to be demonstrated. A first clinical application will likely not be a prophylactic vaccine because the tolerance for side effects is very low for a drug that is injected into healthy individuals. That was in Moderna's own literature in 2016. So that causes me to be very concerned about this messenger RNA lipid-coated injection.
And isn't it also true that one of those organizations, too, maybe it was Pfizer or maybe Moderna, I can't remember, you can correct me if I'm wrong, one of them has been trying to do mRNA vaccines for a little over a decade and has never gotten anywhere close to being able to invent it and come out with a viable vaccine. And then all of a sudden, here in a matter of, you know, 6 to 9 months, they were able to produce it after decades of not even get, I don't think they didn't even get out of the trials.
That's exactly right. And, you know, here's the deal. I've been doing this for 40 years, Ms. Hannah, mm-hmm. And I've seen multiple medications brought onto the market that were removed within months of coming onto the market because of serious adverse side effects. If our government had not given liability protection to Moderna and Pfizer, this so-called vaccine would have been removed within 30 days because of all the adverse reactions that have been happening. I'm talking about lethal adverse reactions to this so-called vaccine. Let me just give you one example. In the very first few weeks after this vaccine, so-called vaccine, was allowed onto the market, an OBGYN doctor in Florida, I believe it was given the vaccine, and within just a day or two, he developed severe thrombocytopenia. And by severe, I mean he had zero platelets. Platelets are that particle in your blood that helps to clot the blood. And within several days' time, he died despite intensive care unit support, despite giving him platelets continuously for several days' time. And this doctor died with zero platelets in his bloodstream. Now, the manufacturers said there was no connection, but everybody on the scene was convinced that it was because of the vaccine that was given to him 2 days prior to all of this occurring. Now, if you, well, let me just give you another, for instance, just 2 weeks ago, maybe not even 10 days ago, a Baptist missionary in the United States who volunteered at a hospital had to receive the vaccine in order to be a volunteer. Within 2 days of receiving this so-called vaccine, she had to have both lower extremities amputated because of severe blood clotting caused by the vaccine.
I remember this story, and she has eventually lost both hands at the wrist as well because of blood clotting from, yeah.
Now, if you go and look at the public record, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, the VAERS, there have been over 11,000 deaths that have been attributable to the COVID vaccine. Now, I'm telling you, Ms. Hannah, if the government had not given liability protection to Pfizer and Moderna, these vaccines would have been off the market within 30 days.
That's right.
I've seen medications put on the market and pulled within 30 days because of just 10 serious adverse reactions.
That's what I wanted to ask, is how many adverse reactions typically will pull a medication
for? Oh, I've seen medicines pulled just because of 10 serious adverse reactions. And there's 11,000 people who have died within days of receiving this vaccine. And it's unimaginable to me that these vaccines are still available. Just let me give you a perspective on this. In the last 20 years, there have been 4,206 deaths attributable to all vaccines that are on the market. And yet, in the first 5 months of 2021, there have been 4,406 deaths that have occurred within days of people receiving the COVID vaccine. In the years 2018, 19, and 20, there were an average of 23 deaths that were attributable to all vaccines that were on the market. And yet, in 2019 and 2020, there have been over 11,000 deaths since COVID came on the market. More than that, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System has reported more than 409,000 serious adverse events. If you go on the internet and you plug in young men with inflammation of the heart and serious risk of DVT, you will see between December the 20 of 2020 and March of 2021, over 113 reports of thrombocytopenia and 20 reports of massive brain hemorrhage, which is unbelievable. In the last 20 years, there was an average of only 0 to 34 reports of significant brain hemorrhage per year in the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. But in the first 5 months of 2021, there were 493, and all but one were due to COVID. In the last 20 years, there were an average of 0 to 20 cases of myocarditis or heart attack due to all vaccines in the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. In the first 5 months of 2021, there were 385 reports of myocarditis or heart attack. 380 of them were due to COVID. And it's unimaginable to me that this vaccine is still available, still being promoted, vigorously promoted, and they're even thinking of vaccine mandates.
Well, and it's the for anybody and everybody. You know, that's the thing. It's they're saying everybody should, you know, and I mean, I've seen just this week, the Medical University of South Carolina has started putting a huge push for pregnant women, pregnant people. You know, you can't say women anymore, pregnant people, birthing folks, that we get vaccinated. And they have no idea what the effects are. And for my age group, it's just, well, I don't want to get into all of that because I know we're getting down on time. Yeah. But you've been, the words you've said before, you're reluctant to recommend the vaccine, and but you're not totally against it. So who do you advise to take the vaccine?
I recommend that people who are over 65 who have serious comorbidities, COPD, which is emphysema, coronary artery disease, diabetes, obesity, you know, people who are elderly and infirm and have multiple comorbidities. If people are under 65 and have these comorbidities, then perhaps they should take the vaccine as well. But healthy people under 65, I think the risk of the vaccine is significant enough that they should not consider the vaccine. People over 65 who are healthy, I think they should have a pause about taking the vaccine as well.
Mm-hmm. I like to say that there's inherent risk with getting COVID, no matter your age.
Yep.
There's inherent risk of taking the vaccine.
That's correct.
No matter your age.
And you have to weigh the risk.
You have to. It's risk-benefit analysis. And that's why the mandates are such a bad idea, because every person and their health and their health record is different. And they need to be able to sit down with their doctor and have a fair discussion that is unpolluted by politics about their health and what the best step forward is for them.
Right.
So if you're not, you know, if you don't advise the vaccine, so you've got a patient comes in and you don't advise the vaccine, what treatment alternatives do you recommend?
All right. I think hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin are legitimate alternative treatments. It can be used as a preventive measure. For example, in some of the third world countries where hydroxychloroquine is taken on a regular basis, twice a week, sometimes three times a week, to prevent malaria, the risk of acquiring COVID is dramatically less than it is in the Western world. For example,
well, I was just going to say, which is why you're not seeing, you know, some of these third world countries where their hygiene is not as good. I mean, that's one of the things that's been pounded into us, you know, is social distancing, washing your hands, doing all these, you know, hygiene things that, let's just be honest, in a lot of these third world countries are not as good. So why are you not seeing people being totally wiped out by COVID-19? And one of those reasons could possibly be that they take something like hydroxychloroquine for malaria and things like that already.
Well, for example, in some of these third world countries that use hydroxychloroquine on a regular basis for malaria prophylaxis, their COVID rate is 69.9% less than in Western Europe and the United States, simply because they're taking hydroxychloroquine on a regular basis. The rate per million of COVID in India is 273 per million, because so many people take hydroxychloroquine as a malaria prophylaxis. In New York, the rate is 2,700 per million. In New Jersey, it's even higher than that. It's like 2,900 per million. But folks in the United States have sneered at taking hydroxychloroquine,
which is relatively a harmless drug, and relatively. So is ivermectin. I mean,
I know I've prescribed hydroxychloroquine, Plaquenil, for rheumatoid arthritis routinely in my medical practice, and it's a fairly safe medication. And you know, you're not talking about taking it forever like some people do with hydroxychloroquine. You're just talking about for a few weeks or months at a time. Another option is monoclonal antibody and remdesivir. All of those are in-hospital therapies that work very well. Of course, we recommend vitamin D, zinc, a baby aspirin, sometimes prednisone and azithromycin. All of those are legitimate alternative treatments that work very well, some for preventive therapy, some for acute therapy. All of those things work quite well, and they've been proven in other countries to work very, very well, and I've been using those in my medical practice, and so have other doctors.
So last question, what do you think of vaccine mandates?
I don't think it's a good idea at all. I think it erodes confidence in public health authorities. When mandates are issued, people begin to wonder why. And people rebel against vaccine mandates. And I don't think it's a good public health policy to require people to take a vaccine. It should be voluntary. It also ignores the natural immunity side of things. A lot of people have been exposed to COVID. They have the natural antibodies, and they shouldn't be required to take a vaccine if they've already been exposed and already have the antibodies to COVID.
Because studies have proven to show that the natural immunity is robust, it's long-lasting, you know, so you don't need to get the vaccine if you have natural immunity.
Well, let's conclude with this, Hannah. I know that there are a lot of folks out there that have a fear in their hearts about the condition of our world, about the pandemic. And I want our listeners to understand that our God is a great big God. And our God is a sovereign God. And this pandemic did not slip up on our God. And he didn't look over the ramparts of heaven and say, oh my goodness, I can't believe this happened. He knew before the world began that this pandemic was going to occur. And he has everything in control. All of these events have been sifted through his all-knowing and all-loving hands. And his people are in his hands. He is the good shepherd, the shepherd of the sheep. And if you're listening to my voice today, I want you to know that your God is a good shepherd. And he loves you with an everlasting love. And he has your future in his hands. I want you to understand that your God is an awesome God. He has thunder in his footsteps and lightning in his fist. Our God is an awesome God.
Thank you for listening to this edition of More Than Medicine. For more information on how to contact the Jackson family, to schedule a speaking engagement, or how to obtain Dr. Jackson's books, go to jacksonfamilyministry.com. This podcast was produced by Bob Sloan Audio Productions.